accession number 18835, Real One.
Is that the clock?
This is Mr. Jack Davis, and it's Real One. Mr. Davis, could I ask you first of all about your life before the war started? Whereabouts were you born and brought up?
I was born in London, Kentish Town.
Could you tell me something about your childhood?
Well, you see, I was one of a family of eight. I had three brothers and four sisters. Incidentally, my three brothers and myself were all served in the 1914 war. And unfortunately for me, I never knew my mother well, because she died when I was between 3 and 4 years old. And we had a housekeeper to come in, look after the family, and the inevitable happened, that my dad married her and brought up another 8 stepchildren. So he was a father of 16 children. I think he had other hobbies as well. But, you see, the girls, they don't have the same attitude towards a stepmother as the males do. And so I was brought up mainly with my stepbrothers and sisters, which I never regarded them as stepbrothers. They were part of my... I even have one survivor of my stepsisters, and she visits me. And all the girls, when they were able, they moved out. The elder two of my sisters, they settled in South Africa and started their lives there prior to the war in about 1912. And a third sister, she went onto the stage because of our connection with show business, my relations. Most of them are all connected with the show business, the concert parties and music hall. And she joined one of the junior troops, one of the very first, the troop called Carrie Laurie's Juveniles, and she was in show business right until she retired, over 70, and in 1960 she was vice president of the Concert Artists Association.
Oh yes, I can see that.
Which
yes.
I am an honorary member.
Well, tell me about your childhood. Where did you go to school?
I went to a church school in Kentish Town. And right from the infant's time, around about 4 or 5 years old. And I left school at 14 in those days. And that was before it came under the authority of the, first of all, the LCC. It was governed by, a board of governors. We used to have to pay school money for our lessons in those days. And being a church school, one of our important part of our education was, of course, religion. And we were associated with the parish church, and on various occasions, on saints' days and that, we used to form a crocodile and to go to the church. Incidentally, my younger brother, who was only 18 months younger than myself, he was a member of the church choir. And, I was destined to go into the civil service, but I could not visualize myself sitting behind a desk for the rest of my days. I was one of the restless sort, you know, because my main interest in life was more or less centered around sporting activities. I was an early enthusiast of cricket right from my school days, and it remained for me even today. Cricket is my ruling passion, as it were.
What did your father do?
I'm going back to my forefathers. I understand that my great-grandfather was a Polish count, Count Kaczewski, and we were partly Jewish, you see, because the family originated from a Polish Jew. And they were refugees, they were political refugees, and settled in Portugal, where they adopted the name of Da Costa. My father was born in Portugal, and he kept the name of Da Costa in his business. He came to England when he was quite young, 17 or 18, and he was a court hairdresser and chiropodist. I mean by a court hairdresser, he had two salons in London, one in Mayfair and one in Jermyn Street, where it was usual thing for the debs to be presented at court, and he was used to do with the ostrich feathers when they were presented at Buckingham Palace. And they had adopted the name of Da Costa, and he used that as a business name. But the family name changed to Davis. I queried it very often from my father, and the nearest I could get to how it was created, the name, he assured me that he thought it was a corruption of David, which is a revered name in the Jewish fraternity. But he wasn't an Orthodox Jew, because My mother was a Christian, Lucy, and we were all baptized as Christians. Oh, the first family. So that's how we got the name of Davis.
Well, that's very interesting.
It is.
What an interesting background you
had. Well, Dad was a wonderful person in so far as his knowledge. He was a linguist. He spoke half a dozen languages quite fluently, including Norwegian. We had a friend that lived near us who was a Norwegian, and he used to visit. And it was quite a surprise to us when they could converse in the Norwegian. He always carried a book of Omar Khayyam, always in his pocket. And he was more or less a student of ornithology and other things. He's very well read, and he's a most marvellous conversationalist. But as we considered the male part of the family, of the first family, he was may have been a very good for father, but a rotten husband. Because you see, living in being born in the Victorian era, the habit or the trend was to have large families, and the way we viewed it, that the women were there, the wives were there, with no status at all outside the kitchen. And the wife was there to keep him well fed, happy, and rear his children with no business anywhere else. And the greatest change that I learned and witnessed during my early days was the emancipation of women when votes for women came about. Now I can remember seeing them chain themselves to the railings at the National Liberal Club, when the National Liberal Club was, the Liberal government was in power. Mrs. Pankhurst.
Did you see them yourself?
I thought it was a wonderful thing for women to get what they were entitled to. And of course, you see, born fruit, what have we got? A prime minister for a woman. And also directors, ladies, managing directors and directors of companies, and in politics. It's a wonderful thing for women. And I thought it was the right place for a woman, not only in the kitchen, but outside the kitchen.
Now, you sound to me like a feminist.
Well, I worked at the National Liberal Club.
Did you?
Up to the time I joined the army. And fortunately, our manager of the club was a Frenchman, Monsieur Manteau. And so we had no difficulty in joining up en masse. There were 30 of us from the club, all employees of the club. We joined the army on the same day.
Before we get on to World War One, do you remember anything about the Boer War?
Yes. Well, you see, my stepmother, I think at one time she was engaged to one of the lads that actually went through war, in the Boer War. And I can remember them, you know, the usual atmosphere was about in those days, the songs. The boys have got my daddy, my soldier dad. And after the war, when the war finished in the early 1900s, I remember the procession, the equivalent to what we know as the territorials. They were called the CIVs, the City Imperial Volunteers, and they marched through London. And I was taken to watch them, and actually saw that my mother's previous boyfriend, that she was supposed to be engaged to, were in the procession. So, apart from hearing about the stories that went around with the during the Boer War, as much as I can remember, because I was only about 6 or 7 years old then. My next experience of that time was being taken to see Queen Victoria's funeral with the hearse all draped and the horses with all the plumes and all that. It's quite a sight. And these things, they always remain in your memory because you're young enough to retain. These are things that I always will remember. So life was rather interesting though. I remember my first toy as such, a little boat I was taking to Richmond on the Thames there, and we went by horse bus, where the buses had horses instead of mechanical things. And I can remember the journey from where we were at Kentish Town to Richmond, where halfway there they had a sort of replacement for the horses, they changed horses there, so they didn't have to do the whole journey. And also most of the traffic was horse-drawn there, had some cabs and all that sort of thing. So it was the advent of the motor car that came into in those days. Then we thought it was marvellous. And of course all the main roads where the London Transport was, the London General Omnibus Company, with the tram lines run by horses, with the lines inset in main road until they dug them up. And where I live, between quite near to Highgate and Hampstead, where they used to have a trace horse to hitch on to the tram to take them up the hill. So motor cars were quite a thing, you know. Excited. I also remember the first when they built the underground. We had free rides for the whole week from our Kentish Town when they built the station there Charing Cross and the Bank. That's as far as it went in those days. And there were two stations. There was Kentish Town, South Kentish Town, before it got to Camden Town.
This is all so fascinating. And is it the case that you were working in the Liberal Club when the war started?
Yes.
Do you remember the outbreak of war, Mr. Davis?
I do.
Tell me about that, would you please?
The 3rd of August, 1914. And I, as I said, we all went up to Joyland. My two brothers came with me, and we went to the recruiting office in Great Scotland Yard to join up. My younger brother was 17 at the time, and he looked about 13. My elder brother was, I think, 2.5 years older than myself. I was accepted and got the, what was traditional, the king's shilling. So I was in. My younger brother was, the recruiting sergeant had a look at him and he said, have you come to join the army, son? Yes, sergeant. He said, well, you better come back next year when you're a bit older. My elder brother was rejected on medical grounds because he had to have surgery to remove a vein. I think they wouldn't accept him until he'd had that done. So I was the only one that went. My eldest brother was a regular soldier, and he went out with the expeditionary force and was wounded on the retreat from Mons. And subsequently, he was I get mental blocks now and again, and I can't remember words.
Oh, but you're doing so well. I expect he was invalided out, was he? Yes.
Discharged.
Discharged.
The word I was talking
about. Yes, I couldn't think of it either. So we're both as bad. Right. So that was your family situation at that time. So what were you enlisted into?
Pardon?
You were enlisted into the army, were you?
Well, the day after we enlisted, we were all detailed to meet at, St. Martin's in the Field, in London, St. Martin's in the Field. And we assembled there the following morning. There were about 750 of us, all in the forecourt. And it was only when roll call was done and all the details were taken, we were marched in civvies to Paddington Station, where there was a special train waiting, which took us down to Falmouth. That is only when we learned we were to form the 9th Battalion of the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry, which was newly formed. We started the battalion ourselves. Our colonel at the time was the Honourable Sir William Trefusis, whose wife, Lady Mary Trefusis, was lady-in-waiting to Queen Mary. And we were housed in mainly empty houses because a lot of them had got empty by people moving away and the Marfolk going into the service. Anyhow, as I mentioned before, we had left the Liberal Club en masse, so that when we arrived at Falmouth on our records and looked into, we had to form the officers' mess in the Bay Hotel. We had the people that were all experienced, waiters, wine waiters, servants, valets, and all the rest. Myself, I was detailed to help the chef in the kitchen. Now, you see, the fact that I was a member of a large family, it meant that domestically I was fully trained before ever I went in there, because you had to do all sorts of things around the house. You used to have to clean the house from top to bottom when we were youngsters. So cooking held no difficulties for me. I knew I could cook. So anyhow, I was given 2 orderlies to do all the rough work, and I helped the chef, who was a civilian chef, with his daughter. The daughter did all the pastries and the sweets there. And as there was still civilian residents in the hotel, but the other part was taken over by the army, and it formed the officers' mess. Now, you see, after I'd been doing this sort of thing in the kitchen, helping to do filleting fish and all sorts of things, cooking, I thought to myself, this is not what I came to join the army for. Because in the early days, the people were led to believe this was a phony war. It was only going to last a few weeks or months, and that said that lasted for 4.5 years. So I volunteered for active service, and I went out with a draft that was sent out to reinforce the 6th Battalion at Ypres, at Sanctuary Wood. You heard of Sanctuary Wood? Yeah. Where they first used the liquid fire with the canisters on their back with the nozzle. The trenches were held by the Durham Light Infantry. Our brigade consisted of county regiments, the Durhams, the Somersets, the Duke of Cornwall, the Oxford and Bucks Light Infantry. And the Durhams faced the Germans when they used this gas, this liquid fire on them. They had no defence against it. We had to go in and take over. But I was fortunate that I had been in action just a little before I arrived there. And we were taken out of the trenches and put back behind the line. And that's when we had to reinforce to make up the battalion to full strength